great. So thank you for the introduction. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So the objectives for my talk are twofold. First, I want to describe perceptions among users of personal genomic testing regarding the medical utility of their results from the PGEN study participants. And next, I'd like to identify factors that explain the variability observed in these perceptions. So a little bit of background. We've already talked about personal genomic testing today. I just want to emphasize this really is a growing industry. So to date, probably around 500,000 people have had this testing through companies like 23andMe, Pathway Genomics, Navigenics. But it's really a growing industry, and we can take 23andMe as an example. They've really ramped up their advertising. They've lowered the cost of their service this year to $99, and they've actually stated a goal to offer their testing to 1 million people by the end of this year. So with this advertising and lower costs comes increasing awareness and greater accessibility of this type of testing. So one of the great debates that surrounded personal genomic testing, or PGT, is whether or not it is useful. So how do we measure the utility of this kind of testing that's offered outside of the healthcare system? It's always been a challenge to have this debate because no one can seem to agree on how to define the utility of personal genomic testing. So we might think about clinical utility. So does having PGT improve health outcomes? Does it reduce the risk of disease? Does it lead to more appropriate screening? Or we might talk about the personal utility of PGT. Does this satisfy their curiosity? Does it increase their understanding of genetics concepts? With this question comes, well, what outcomes should we measure? Should we look at changes in behavior before and after testing, or changes in attitudes, just understanding or perceptions? Or should we actually look at the cost impact on the healthcare system, which is certainly something we're all interested in here? It's really important to think about how to measure utility because we want to be able to answer the question, when is PGT beneficial, both to the consumers and to society, and when is it detrimental to the various stakeholders? So I would argue that understanding the expectations of actual PGT consumers is critical. We assume that people use PGT because they want to improve their health or reduce their future risk of disease, but this is really just an assumption. There isn't a lot of data out there, although there is some from a few studies, about why people undergo this testing and what they're expecting to get out of it. If people are undergoing PGT for different reasons or have different expectations, then our typical measures of clinical utility used in healthcare may actually not be appropriate. We also know that consumer motivations likely vary, so the utility of PGT might be different for different people. So just to review, my data comes from the PGEN study, a longitudinal survey design study where participants were surveyed prior to testing, and then a short-term follow-up at 2 to 3 weeks after results, and a six-month follow-up. And due to the collaborative nature of our study with 23andMe and Pathway Genomics, a unique feature of PGEN is that we have actual genetic risk results from individuals. So at the 2 to 3 week survey point, we asked about four perceptions of utility, of the possible utility of PGT. So the first three here, you can see that there's generally broad agreement. These were measured on a 5-point Likert scale, and the vast majority of people somewhat or strongly agreed that PGT helped me get a better perspective on my health, made me feel like I have more control over my health, or has influenced how I will manage my health in the future. When we looked at the fourth one, though, there was somewhat less agreement. So personal genomic testing can help reduce my chances of getting sick. 58% of people somewhat or strongly agreed with this statement, while 42% were neutral or disagreed. And they were actually about split evenly between neutral and disagreed. So I'm going to call this therapeutic optimism for lack of a more well-known term, but we'll stick with therapeutic optimism for the purposes of this talk. And this is the outcome that I'm going to focus on. I chose it as sort of the most interesting measure of utility, both because there are divergent attitudes with regard to therapeutic optimism, and because it speaks not just to an attitude or a belief, but also an action. So people who think that PGT can reduce their chances of getting sick think that there's something they can do or that can be done for them to reduce their risks. So next we wanted to explain why is there this variability in perceptions. And I'm going to speak today about some baseline variables that we assessed as potential predictors and their actual genetic test results. So just to review where this data is coming from, at baseline, we asked individuals about demographic information, their health behaviors, health status, genetic literacy and numeracy, and medical and family history. We then have information on the SNP-based relative risks that they received from the companies. And at 2 to 3 weeks, we asked them about their perceived utility of PGT. So the methods I used were logistic regression. The outcome is endorsement of therapeutic optimism, so somewhat or strongly agree versus neutral or disagree. We evaluated each predictor in turn, and I'm actually going to go through a total of 87, but it won't be that painful, I promise. Because we looked at so many, we do perform a correction for multiple hypothesis testing because we expect, just by chance, about 5 results will be significant. And in each of our analyses, we do adjust for age, gender, ethnicity, education, income, and testing company. A total of 1,058 participants are included in the analyses presented here today, and that was after exclusion for missingness on either the outcome or these 6 adjustment variables. And our correction, by the way, was done using the false discovery rate control. For those who aren't familiar with it, it's a lot like a Bonferroni control for multiple hypothesis testing, but it's actually a little bit less significant, so we're maybe more likely to see something that's significant if it's there. So I won't review the demographic characteristics, but you can see that they're quite similar to what others have presented today, even though my sample is maybe a little bit smaller than the general baseline. We really thought that demographic characteristics would explain some of the variability in attitudes. So I think we sort of assume, well, people who are more highly educated might be less likely to think that these PGT results can help improve their health. Or people who are older might be less likely to think that genetics is going to make a difference. In fact, we found no association between any of these demographic characteristics and therapeutic optimism. So next, what I really thought was going to be the one was baseline health behaviors and health status. So we asked people about their fruit and vegetable intake, their exercise, whether they smoke, their perceived autonomy in the healthcare decision-making process. You might think that people who are sort of more proactive about their health might be using this testing with the expectation that it's sort of another addition to their toolkit that they can use to improve their health or reduce their risks. Again, these were all null results. We didn't find sort of any explanation for these differences in therapeutic optimism. So we kept looking. The next thing we did in the survey, we asked about their personal medical history with respect to 14 conditions. We asked if they had ever had a history of the condition or whether they had a current diagnosis. And for this analysis, I computed a score. So this score represents the sort of burden of disease, the number of conditions they report having had or currently having. You can see from this graph here, so endorsers are those who endorse therapeutic optimism. Non-endorsers do not. Neither of these scores was associated with therapeutic optimism. So we might have thought people who are more sick expect that this test is going to help them. And at least as measured by this personal history score, that was not the case. When we looked at each of the individual 14 conditions, we did find, in fact, those reporting ever having a history of high cholesterol or obesity were more likely to endorse therapeutic optimism. Those with a current diagnosis of a heart condition were quite a bit less likely to be optimistic about the utility of these results, which is sort of interesting. And I'm going to come back to these results at the end. Keep in mind these are all prior to correction for multiple hypothesis testing. Next, we looked at the family medical history, again computing a score representing the burden of disease in the family history, and there was no association between the number of conditions they reported having in their family and their therapeutic optimism. When we looked at individual conditions in the family, the only one that came out as significant was lupus, and I would caution you from reading too much into this because personally, I can't find any reason why there should be an association between a family history of lupus and therapeutic optimism. So this may be a fluke, and I'll come back to it again at the end. We also looked at adoptive status. So we thought, okay, and here we were really trying to think of things that could possibly explain this outcome. So we thought, well, maybe if you're adopted and you don't have a lot of family history information, you think genetics is really going to help me understand what I'm at risk for and what I'm not and what I can do about it. There was no association. So next we looked at literacy and numeracy. We had a 9-point measure for genetic literacy. I thought perhaps those with higher literacy might be less likely to endorse therapeutic optimism. In fact, there was no association whatsoever. When we looked at numeracy, however, somewhat surprisingly, we found that those with higher levels of numeracy were more likely to endorse therapeutic optimism. So I think this is a strange result personally. I don't know if anyone later can think of why this might be, but so we'll just keep it in mind. Next to last, we looked at what I termed genetics exposure. So we asked people at baseline, have you ever seen a geneticist? Have you ever had genetic testing in a different context? So we thought maybe their experience with genetics would lead them to think that it was more or less useful. We also asked, who did you discuss your decision to get testing with? In general, we found no association. The one interesting thing was that those who discussed the decision to get testing with a company representative prior to ordering the testing were actually more likely, and there's with an odds ratio of 11.3, they were more likely to endorse therapeutic optimism. So this is a really interesting result. It probably sticks out to a lot of people in the audience. I do want to caution you, though, that the frequency of this predictor was quite low. So very, very few people actually contacted the company and spoke to them, just about 2% of our overall sample. So it's hard to read too much into this odds ratio of 11, but it's definitely something that's interesting and sticks out to me. So finally, we wanted to integrate the genetic test results because we asked about utility after the results were received. So I computed a risk index. So we took all of the results that they got and dichotomized them into a increased risk genetic result or average or below, and the risk index represents the proportion overall of their results that were increased risk. You can see on average people about one-fifth of the results they get back are increased risk, but we found no association between this risk index and therapeutic optimism. So to summarize, after going through 87 potential predictors and finally stopping myself from looking any further, we came up with 6 baseline variables that were associated with therapeutic optimism at an alpha of 0.05. However, once we corrected for multiple hypothesis testing, actually none of these survived and none were associated. So in conclusion, we do see that consumers express different ideas about the therapeutic benefit of personal genomic testing. However, there's just no clear explanation at this point for these differences. And we've sort of put our heads together and tried to think of all the different things that could explain it. And so far, everything we've tried has not panned out. But there are a few results that I think are worth thinking a little bit more about. So The personal medical history predictors are at least plausible. So the idea that people with a personal history of high cholesterol or obesity think that these genetic results might be useful to them makes a little bit of sense. These are conditions that are highly modifiable. There are genetic risks and behavioral modifications that can impact risk. So maybe people are looking, for a genetic explanation of their obesity, thinking this might direct them to actions they could take to prevent obesity in the future. So it might make sense to go back to these folks specifically, and we have a lot more data about motivations and perceptions. The next one is this idea that discussing with a company rep increases therapeutic optimism. So to me, this suggests there's something about the company messaging, either in their advertising or in their online content or what they're saying to people when they call. It's hard to kind of get, we don't have data on this per se, but we can look at the companies and kind of how they market their product. And we also have additional information. We can go look at these 2% of people and see what else they say that suggests maybe they're getting information from the companies that's leading them to feel a certain way about the utility of their results. So one of the limitations of my analysis is that we did not evaluate condition-specific risk results. So I just used a risk index. At this point, I felt like 87 variables was enough. I didn't need to add on another 30 risk results. But, you know, it might be interesting. Maybe it's a high-risk breast cancer result that actually makes people think that this is useful information. What I think is probably more interesting is actually the interaction between medical history and risk results. So when we think about things like high cholesterol and obesity, maybe it's that people who come in with that context of I've got a family history of high cholesterol or a personal history of high cholesterol, it's in those people that a genetic risk result of high or low risk for high cholesterol kind of makes a difference to what their perceived utility of the testing is. So I think it'll make sense in the future to kind of try to match up what people are coming in with and then what they get from the testing to look at their perceptions of utility. So just to acknowledge again, the PGEN study collaborators, and personally, I'm funded by a CIHR Doctoral Foreign Study Award, so I'd like to thank them. And at this point, if I'm happy to take questions, or if anyone has any suggestions about further paths to go down, I would love to hear them.
So when people think about benefits, they also think about burdens. So
yep.
You weigh benefits and burdens, so you're looking at benefits only and not burdens.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So do we know of any studies, or can you think of a study where you're balancing all of those things, benefits and burdens, and also literacy, numeracy, and awareness of your human and civil liberty?
Yep.
Because that might be an interesting combination.
Mm-hmm. So I can't think of a study that's done it. I don't know if you're asking if I can think of an analysis. From our data, we do actually have, we do ask people about sort of their, we ask about their political beliefs, we ask about privacy, beliefs about privacy, right to information, right to genetic information.
People have actual knowledge of the law and the human rights protection in
yeah.
their jurisdiction.
So that's a good question. We don't ask about that. I would assume people don't.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think that's something we asked about. I think we do touch on GINA in the surveys, and we do ask people about their ideas of privacy and right to information, but not about the law.
Related to that strange finding about the intervention, apparent intervention, or possible intervention of the corporate interest.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the comment. Yep. Right.
So if there's not much in there, and it's general wisdom, people wisdom.
Yeah, so I think in general, we might say that. In general, people don't think they're very useful. They're just doing them for fun. They understand that, you know, there's not a lot of predictive ability. But the reason we picked this outcome is that, you know, fully 58% of people think that these results that they got are going to help reduce their risk of getting sick. Oh, they're probably wrong. maybe they're wrong, but this was more looking, because we're just focused on perceptions. So there's a perception that they can take this report and do something with it. They can take an action or have a doctor do something that will actually reduce their chances of getting sick. So that's an interesting finding that many people believe that. Yeah, so maybe it's totally random. Maybe there's no explanation for why these 58% of people believe this. I like to think it's not totally random and that someday I'll find the answer, but yeah, maybe they just think that. Yep. So I don't know that we have locus of control questions per se. We do have questions about their autonomy in healthcare, so how, you know, their interactions with their doctor, how much control they have over their healthcare. We do ask them about sort of genetic determinism, how much they think genetics contributes to disease versus environment. So there are some questions woven in there that we could kind of probably put together into a kind of locus of control idea. I think that's a good thing to think about. Yep. So we do ask about, we sort of have a measure, I think, of uncertainty. We ask about emotional responses to the uncertainty. So, yeah, I think one of the things I haven't looked at here, we have a lot of measures of emotional response to the test, and that would be a good factor to consider. Yep. Yeah. I mean, they may have been. So, right, so it's a highly educated population, so you're not going to see the contrast between, you know, someone with a high school education and someone with a medical degree. So certainly I think there is some of that, and these results might be different if they were done in a different population. The thing about the PGEN study is that it is actual consumers. So these weren't people recruited from, say, one health group, or people that enrolled in the study and then got the testing. These are people that go to the companies and get the testing. So this is sort of the reality of what's out there, and it reflects the consumer base. Yes, yeah, so as far as we know, I want to say yes. We're actually kind of, that analysis is underway. We're just getting the data from the companies to look at their overall consumer base and compare that with what we have. Okay. Thanks so much.